I'm your host, William Del Pilar, the one, the only conservative Latino. And let me tell you, today's show is hotter than my cousin trying to cross a border in July. So stoke those coals, because we're diving headfirst into the cesspool of American democracy. Voter fraud. That's right, the dirty little secret that's been lurking in the shadows since our founding fathers first put quill to parchment. Now, I know what you're thinking, especially you pajama boys out there. But surely, our modern technologically advanced society, voter fraud couldn't possibly be a problem anymore. If you only knew. Let me tell you, the 2020 election was so clean and above board that unicorns pranced through polling stations, sprinkling fairy dust on ballots. People, it's a statistical impossibility that fraud doesn't occur in any election. Yeah. I know the vajayjays out there will sarcastically point to any YouTube conspiracy theorist or a conservative uncle's Facebook post. But hey, at least we don't have Uncle Fester sit on my lap Democrat in the family. I mean, that's one family reunion we'd all avoid. And don't even get me started on mail-in ballots. They're about as secure as a screen door on a submarine. Why, I hear they're practically handing them out like candy on Halloween. I can just imagine the progressive neighborhood. Mommy, what's this absentee ballot I got? Give me that, kid. Just suck on that lollipop and get used to it. We do that a lot in the Democrat Party. But wait, there's more. In a stroke of pure genius, sarcasm people, a judge in Virginia has decided to put non-citizens back on the voter rolls. Because why stop at good old-fashioned American fraud when we can outsource that too? It's like they're sending out engraved invitations to fraudsters. Come one, come all, to the greatest show on earth, Democrat Party Democracy. My conservative friends, we're about to ignite the flames of truth that the mainstream media is desperately trying to snuff out faster and harder than Ted Bundy on a date. This isn't just a casual chat. It's a full throttle ride into the heart of a system that seems hell-bent on keeping us in the dark. Get ready to unleash your inner fire as we expose the voter fraud that's been simmering beneath the surface for far too long. So grab your iced tea and get ready for a sizzling discussion that's sure to fire you up. Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up. I am here with my cohort, the beautiful Miss Annette Ross, and I have with me two what I call GOP operatives. I just love saying that. So James Bond style. First up is Mr. Craig DeLuz, and then we have Jamie Miller. Craig, tell us a little bit about yourself, sir, and then Jamie.
Well, as you said, my name's Craig DeLuz. I've been involved in conservative politics for more than 30 years. I've been involved in media. I've been involved working as a staffer within the California State Legislature. I've worked as an advocate for the Second Amendment with the Firearms Policy Coalition. And now I own my own business called Uncommon Sense Media Group, working with organizations like the Firearms Policy Coalition, Florida Carry, and the California Republican Assembly, helping to promote conservative values. I also host a daily news and commentary program called The Rundown. You can find it on Spotify, on Rumble, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter. Just look for The Rundown, 2A News and Conservative Views, and we're on live Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern.
I can't hear you.
Mr. Miller, you can hear me now, I know. Hey, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. I'm Jamie Miller. I've got about a 30-year career in Florida politics mostly. Also, have spent some time working in West Virginia, North Carolina, and Mississippi. I'm an author of a book that you can find on Amazon, American Speeches That Changed History. Lots of fun tidbits in there about a few speeches, about 20 speeches. I write a Substack at reasonablearguments.com or Substack at reasonablearguments. And you can find me on all my other socials at RepJam that is posted on the screen. So I'm a former senior advisor to Newt Gingrich's presidential campaign in Florida. Worked on probably about 6 different statewide races here in Florida, including the 2000 election and recount. So close elections are, and election fraud. We probably could have a whole show about Broward and Palm Beach counties in 2000, but hopefully we don't go too far on a tangent in that one. It is a little bit of history. We fix most of those problems in Florida, and we'd love to see the rest of the country follow suit.
I'll never forget that. That was I had just started, actually had been going for about 2.5 years, my first startup. And I mean, you're working 18-hour days, but we were all, as we're working, we were glued to Fox, actually. Fox was still fairly new at that point. We were glued to there. I never will forget that hottie Rita Cosby. talking, she was covering the Supreme Court. But so your book on speeches, though, what do you think of my little speech there?
You know, I'm going to say I can't wait to meet you in person and have an adult beverage with you. I can't even imagine how much fun that's going to be.
You know, I do treat everybody nicely. I can be very harsh towards people, but that's only after you cross the line or do something bad to your fellow human. You know, as silly as it sounds, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's the philosophy I live by. And as a former liberal, boy, I have my issues with that party today. But that said, the reason I wanted to do this topic tonight, and I've been sitting on this topic for a long time. I did one episode on it. But that Virginia decision by the judge today, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but I'd like to get your initial thoughts on that, a comment or two, where the judge told Virginia they had to put the non-citizens back on the voter rolls. That made me realize we're 2 weeks out. If we're going to do this voter fraud episode, we got to do it now. And as I researched it more and more, I dumped the other topics I had planned on having for us for this one. But real quick, Miss Annette, what were your let's start with Mr. Craig. Let's start with Mr. Craig DeLuce here. What were your initial thoughts when you saw that decision come down this morning by the Virginia judge forcing by the judge forcing Virginia to put the non-citizen back on the voter rolls?
My first thoughts were I really wanted to find out who appointed the judge. I didn't have enough time to look it up. Because in the end, here's the thing. This is, what good does it do to have citizenship if there are not special benefits? I mean, one of the most important benefits is also, you know, the right that we have, and that's the right to the vote. And when you allow people who have not earned that right, who are not supposed to have that right, when you allow them to partake, you diminish the value of the vote for those who do legally have that right. I have to believe that this is something that should it make its way to the Supreme Court, which I doubt it will by election time, one has to believe that it's going to wind up getting thrown out.
I think so, too, especially based off the reasons. Mr. Jamie.
My initial thought was, wow, Virginia is in play. And that was kind of course, I think we spoke a little bit on when I was on your show before. Thank you for having me back, and thank you for having me tonight. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about how I don't understand how we have laws against foreign money being involved in U.S. campaigns, and yet these judges are passing rules that say foreigners can vote in our elections. And I just ask the question, why don't we allow tourists to fly here and vote? You know, I'm in Siesta Key. We have a lot of international tourists here. Why don't we just throw open our voting, our polling places to the tourists who are here? I mean, if we're going to let illegal immigrants and foreigners vote, why not just open up the voting booth to everybody and let everybody pick the president? That's absurd, right? And so the whole thing is absurd. And so it angers me. I think it angers you. I think it angers everybody who hears it. And I think that's one reason why Kamala Harris is going to lose about 10 days from today.
I hope so. You know, so what Jamie is saying, Annette, is that my cousin that crosses the border in hot July should be able to cast a vote in terms of what the judge was saying. What are your thoughts on that? Should my cousin be able to cast a vote?
Well, I think that I was excited you had these guys on. You guys are a lot more experienced in politics. I should say, William, I should have said this many, many, many shows ago. I entered the political scene, just 4 years ago in 2020 when I was elected, you know, to the school board. So you guys are way more experienced than me. So when I hear things like this, I think to myself, is there fraud on both sides? Why wouldn't the Democrats think that we're playing some tricky games too, right? I mean, they must. And I will say what scared me too, being someone who's running in this 2024 election, is that I saw some people when I was sitting outside the post office going back and forth and in back and forth from the post office into another building, post office into another building. And the one thing I kept on thinking was, are they doing something with the ballots that just all got dropped off at the post office? It actually made me worried because there were a bunch of ballots that had gotten dropped off. I saw people coming in and bringing their ballots in. So I thought to myself, can that happen just in a regular, in Rancho Santa Fe at a post office where what is that person doing with those ballots and why are they going back and forth and what are they doing in the post office? It actually made me really paranoid and a wondering. And then I'll say one final thing that I was at a meeting and Carl DeMaio was there and his thing was everyone should vote this election early. And that's what Trump wanted us to do. So I was just going to ask you if that was also true. Was that something you were suggesting that we could do this time?
For those who don't know, Carl DeMaio is a local, San Diego, local guy in San Diego. He's arguably California's best conservative grassroots activist, even though he hasn't really done anything to turn the tide. But that said, they are stressing the vote early for this because now you can sit there and see if your vote's been counted. And everybody can see if your vote's been counted. And what happens is these machines in place, once you voted and it's been counted, they pull back from the mailings, meaning they save money from having to send 4 million mailers out. If half a million people have already voted, that saves them a lot of money in still trying. It allows them to put more money into trying to focus into other groups to get them to vote. So that's the theory. I mean, I am going to vote this Saturday. I'm going to fill out our mail-in ballots because my wife told me to. You know, we do our votes together and I do my research. And so I'm going to do that. She's like, let's get our vote in early now. I'm like, okay. Because I like to wait till the day of. And drop it off at the polling. It's just something about that, you know? And my take on all this voter fraud is, as a Panamanian, I'm Panamanian Puerto Rican, brought up in a country with two dictators. I say this all the time, but that's how important it is to me. I've seen corrupt voting. So there's something special about America. And when I saw all this start to happen 15, 20 years ago, that kind of crushed me. Because I'm like, whoa, these are United States of America. We're special. We're different. And once we lost the chain of custody, I was like, we're no better than the Banana Republic. Because if you can't track where that vote starts and ends at, then the potential for corruption in between isn't a question of is it there? It will be there. As I said, statistically speaking, there is no election that is voter free. It's just a statistical, it's not a no-sum game in that. There's always some form of voter fraud, whether it's an operative paying a homeless guy to get their, you know, to go vote for them a certain way, just to paying somebody money, to just an outright fraud that some people believe is happening with absentee ballots. So getting into this topic, you know, there's perception in this country that there's minimal voting fraud. And we're going to talk about throughout history, from the days of our founding fathers, there has been voter fraud. I actually blame that on our education system. You know, our kids are told, no, don't think. Just believe what you're told. And when one side sits there and believes that there is no fraud, that's not good. And on the flip side, when the other side believes, our side believes is purely off, you know, on the greatest scale ever, when that's also not true, it's somewhere in the middle. We have to focus on that. Not only that, if there is, go ahead, Annette.
Yeah, let me just say one thing on that though. because I was in a room full of extremely, at least 100 people, you guys. This is what I would love both of you men to speak to, and you too, William, although we get to talk a lot. At least 150 women, right? Very, very conservative. And I stayed till after, and they were telling me that there's another constitution. They told me to look it up online. We really don't have the right constitution. There's actually another constitution. They went into this whole thing. And I guess my point to you guys is, what is real? Seriously, they believed it. No, that's a scary thought, guys. No, to me, there's a group of women in San Diego who are conservative, Republican. They seem very sane to me, who believe we have another constitution. We're not following the one that our founding fathers actually wrote for us. So
what I'm talking about with the lack of education, where we don't understand how this country works, how the founding fathers put mechanisms into place. When you're not taught that, or you forget that, it's easy to fall into believing conspiratorial stories out there because they can make sense. Yeah, that makes sense. But when you take a step back and look at the bigger picture, you're like, you know, to me, I view that as, yeah, you're right. And you know what? And they're following the Constitution that the same shadow government that Trump is still behind and leading this country is doing, you know? So, Jamie and Craig.
Someone is going to pull that little soundbite from you talking about the shadow government, and they're going to use it against you.
No, don't say that.
You know, here's the thing, and one of the challenges right now with technology, it's really easy to develop a website, to create an online presence that seems really, really legitimate, really, really official.
Yes.
And then through social media, be able to push out a narrative that is completely and utterly false. And keep in mind, the best of the false narratives have a little bit of truth in them, just enough truth to verify, but enough falsehood to really throw you off. And I will be honest with you. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I am, however, a conspiracy connoisseur. I love to listen to a good conspiracy because generally over time they wind up falling apart. I'm the type of a person where if I get a meme and it's got something in it that I really like, I will fact check it because you can't believe the memes. You literally have to fact check memes because people believe memes. There was a study that was done that says that of Gen Z, the largest group of people where they get their news among Gen Z, mm-hmm, is TikTok.
Yes, that's right.
First of all, let's just talk about the people that are putting stuff on TikTok. How reliable are they? And then let's consider the fact that, you know, the communist Chinese actually own TikTok and what sort of disinformation and misinformation they allow to be pushed forward. Right.
And I'm not a huge consumer of TikTok, but I do take clips and put it on TikTok and just try as part of my branding because some people are there, right? And quite right. Frankly, that's where my kids are. And mm-hmm. But I will tell you, there is very little of this discussion that they would even allow on their platform because it violates their community standards because they have categorized any discussion about free, fair, and transparent elections as a discussion about mm-hmm. voter fraud, and it violates their community standards because of misinformation. And so you can't even, you know, when you can't have an honest, open debate and discussion, and, you know, Annette, you mentioned, you know, that's actually a conspiracy theory that I have not heard before, and I thought I've heard them all. But it's always fun to hear another one. And then I had so many questions, and I was like, no, don't ask any questions, because if you ask questions, we'll spend 20 minutes on this thing.
Exactly.
And I'm sitting here like, go Google. No, I'm not going to Google it. I'm not going to Google it. And so, you know, so it's one of those things. So, you know, but even if it is a conspiracy, number one, the conspiracy is the wrong word. It's a theory. It's an alternative theory. It's not there. A lot of these things aren't meant to be quote conspiracies. They're meant to just I think people have different ideas, and the only way you really get to the truth, I think, is discussing them. And I mean, I've been really frustrated, especially with TikTok, because I'll literally go on podcasts and say, you know, we have 47% of Americans who don't believe our elections are free, fair, and transparent. Mm-hmm. Like, let's start there. I mean, mm-hmm. and so if when you start having 47% of Americans, we're electing the leader of the free world. And so if 47% of Americans don't believe that the correct person is the leader of the free world, how is that person supposed to take American credibility abroad? And that creates a major problem for all of us when it comes to foreign policy, whether we agree with the foreign policy or not. Mm-hmm. We've already hamstrung our president if we're not going to have free, fair, and transparent elections. And the fact that there's a platform out there that won't even allow you to debate it or discuss it in the way of, hey, let's not even talk about voter fraud. Let's just talk about how we have free, fair, and transparent elections in the future. Like, hey, let's not count votes in the middle of the night. Let's, you know, maybe let's live stream everywhere ballots are, you know, stored, distributed, voted, collected, counted, and canvassed. You know, why is that? That's not a conspiracy theory. That's not fraud. That's just providing 100% transparency. And how is being transparent, you know, fraudulent or a conspiracy? And I just, you know, so I'm sorry if I went down a little rabbit hole there, Craig and William, but, and, you know, all three of you, and that, I was like, but it's a frustration of mine personally, because I've seen enough to know that there are so many ways to create fraud. I mean, over the last two U.S. censuses, after 2010 count and after 2020 count, Florida should have gotten an extra congressional seat each time. And somehow New York retained an extra congressional seat last time it was hundreds of votes, not thousands, hundreds of people. It was like 700 people at that time we had 1,000 people moving here a day, with about a third of those coming from New York. So in 2 days we made up what they said kept the congressional seat in New York. And that to me is fraud.
If I can chime in, the other part of election, I don't want to call it election fraud, but I want to call it election interference. And this is something that we know and it's documented it's happening, whether it's technology firms that are suppressing negative searches against Democrats, whether it is technology companies like Gmail that are making sure that conservative fundraising emails are winding up in people's spam. Whether it's suppressing stories. One of the things that we know right now is that the media that is supposed to be the free and fair media, that's supposed to be the objective media, we know that they are in the pocket almost completely for one side, and it ain't our side. We know that the tech companies, we had in the last election, you had the head of Facebook contribute millions of dollars to get for GOTV efforts in predominantly Democrat communities. I mean, you have got the people who are supposed to be objective, right? Yeah, you've got them working to help the other side. You've got the alphabet agencies and the Department of Justice going and actually, and I feel very comfortable saying this, going and actually spying on a presidential campaign. I mean, that's worse than what happened with Watergate. And yet nobody's been prosecuted. Nobody's been charged. I mean, nothing has happened. And if you want to talk about where an election was clearly and obviously stolen, it was right in front of our face. And nobody says or does anything about it.
You know, we live in a country where we're afraid to talk about this because there's a perception, as Jamie alluded to, you'd lose faith in the system. And that's the worst thing that can happen. And it's not just within the American citizen. It's how we're seeing around the world. I mean, let's not forget Jimmy Carter spent a good part of his life after he was rightfully thrown out of office, you know, going around countries, showing them how to properly vote. And then in 2020, he threw all that out the window and say, no, it was a nice, fair election. They're doing everything right. When in 2020, they broke some of the rules he would preach you can't do in other countries. So let's get into this real quick here and how voter fraud happens. I wrote down, various ways of voter fraud along with actual examples. So I'm going to go through them and then we can discuss them to get your guys' input. So first of all, there's the absentee ballot manipulation. And that's filling out, submitting fraudulent absentee ballots. So in 2010, Gaynell Tinker, a former circuit clerk for Hale County, Alabama, pleaded guilty to multiple counts of absentee ballot fraud by admitting she falsified the ballots of five voters to benefit certain candidates. And my point in bringing that up is that's a small case, but we don't know how many times that happens over and over throughout the country. Then there was ballot box stuffing. You know, actual election workers or operatives, they add fraudulent ballots. This goes back to the old days in Chicago, New York City in the 20s. But it's recent too. In the 2023-24 Bridgeport, Connecticut mayoral election, a judge reordered a rerun of the Democrat primary due to evidence of ballot stuffing. Voter registration fraud. That's when you register ineligible individuals, including non-citizens. That happens here in California. So in 2024, again, the Bridgeport City Councilman Alfred Castillo allegedly convinced a non-citizen to illegally register to vote and cast a ballot. And that happens in California through the DMVs, and it's happening in other states through the DMVs. You get automatically registered to vote, and when an illegal goes to the DMV, gets his driver's license. A lot of times they're registering him to vote. That's been documented here in California. Covering up discrepancies, obviously, you know, the officials hide or fail to report uncounted ballots, the mishandling of election materials. And remember, in 2020, there were Democrat-owned registrar's office, meaning they control them, who kicked the Republicans out. Or, you know, I mean, just that in 2020, but in 2022 in Southfield, Michigan, a poll worker named Sharika Hawkins pled no contest to misconduct for covering up a failure to count 193 absentee ballots in 2018. So we also talk about, we mostly talk about, you know, counting votes for the other side or extra ballots for the other side. But there's also when there's no Republican in that registrar's office counting ballots, they're dumping Trump votes from 2020. That's what I believe.
I think you should add, not to interrupt. I'm sorry,
go ahead.
Multiple state voting, people who are registered in multiple states.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know after the 2000 election, you know, it was impossible at that point to, you know, have AI and really look at every voter in the state and compare it to every state or voter in the nation. But I know that we compared Broward County to Manhattan. And Manhattan, the only borough we looked at was Broward County and Manhattan. And there were 13,000 people who voted double ballots in the 2000 election. And I, you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, I don't want to say those 13,000 people, you know, meant to commit fraud. You know, as you know, in South Florida, we have a lot of older people, and if they got sent a mail-in ballot, they may have voted it. If they got sent another one and they voted it and they really didn't know they voted in two different places. I think there is that type of confusion that happens, but, you know,
A question to that specifically. Mm-hmm. You're being nice for saying they may have voted once or twice. I mean, my take is they never received extra ballots. Somebody else did. You know, I mean, isn't that part of the problem there?
Certainly there's an issue. You know, in South Florida, there was a case in Miami where you had an apartment owner who had, foreign people who they rented to, and they registered everybody who worked in the apartment building and cast about 300 ballots. I think there's a pretty well documented case from the early 2000s where an apartment complex owner voted about 300 ballots for somebody. And so the question becomes is, you know, out of all the things that you mentioned, where can they manufacture enough ballots to make a difference? And, you know, certainly in Florida, when you had 6 million votes cast and you were separated by 537, anything matters. Anything matters. Mm-hmm. You know, but when you start looking at Green Bay, Wisconsin, in 2020, And, you know, Wisconsin ends up being separated by, I think, 18 or 20,000 votes. The only way to manufacture, if in fact there is the election was stolen, the only way to manufacture those votes are the way that you said it, ballot box stuffing. And the way that happens and is still the same way, just like you suggested, which is, you know, kind of 1960 John F. Kennedy style, where people in the precinct vote ballots for people who did not show up, and they do it in the middle of the night because, not because they want to do it under the cloak of darkness, it happens to be under the cloak of darkness, but because they want to see what the turnout is in neighboring counties. And so let's say you have a precinct of 1,000 people, just for my, so it's easy math for me. Mm-hmm. And in that precinct, they have 600 people show up to vote. And in neighboring counties, you have 800 people who are 80% turnout. Well, you know that in this precinct, well, we have 60% turnout. So I know I can vote 230 ballots and nobody's going to question anything because, you know, every poll you see in America is, well, the margin of error is plus or minus 3%. So as long as I don't go too much over that 80%, I go to 82, 83%, I'm going to be in what everybody's going to consider the margin of error or a reasonable turnout. You know, if you bump up to 92 or 93%, there's going to be a big red blinking light. And I also say that ballot fraud is the one crime where if you get away with the crime, you erase the evidence because an illegal ballot cast becomes a legal vote. And once that thing is a legal vote, we are never, none of the four of us are ever going to argue to have a vote taken out of that legal vote pile, because once it's a legal vote, we're going to protect it with everything that our forefathers fought and died for. And so it does give us a little bit of a predicament. So that's why I say we should live stream everywhere ballots are cast, counted, and collected, canvassed, because, you know, the camera doesn't lie. And if those folks are, you know, in the precinct and they're signing, there's another easy way to do it. And a lot of conservatives won't like it. And it's to go to electronic workbooks. And so instead of having paper that people sign when they go into the precinct, you make it an electronic workbook. And that way the precinct worker knows how many people who have showed up to vote. But they won't know who has not voted. They won't know what their signature looks like. And a lot of these places where you go vote and there's paper where you go sign, sometimes they actually have the signature for the voter on file below the line for the voter to sign so the worker can confirm the signature. You know, and so if there's a blank line, now I know what the signature looks like. So I can even try to pretend to make that signature appear like the voter. Mm-hmm. And nobody ever, like, even when they did the audit in Arizona, and that was one of my frustrations with the crowd and there was a good number of those folks, the ninja crowd, I think they called themselves, I forget exactly the name, but that was based here in Sarasota, that company. And I kept telling them, I was like, you have to, if you're going to audit anything, audit the signatures in the precinct, because you start looking for, you know, a few 10 or 15% of signatures that look similar. Now you have something to base that, hey, listen, there's fraud happening in that precinct. And even though we're not going to change that election, we now know we either have to put new poll workers or poll watchers in that precinct. And so that to me is still the number one way where if you're going to have fraud committed, that's where enough fraud is committed that you can actually impact the outcome of the election. You know, and granted, there's an election a few years ago. I think it was 2000. Iowa was separated by 2000 votes. You know, of course, Florida was 537, you know, so there are elections where that small margin of stolen ballots will make a difference. But when you start talking about 10, 20, 25,000 votes a margin, that's a major, major conspiracy.
Right. you know, I just feel like we've been lectured by a professor in a good way, you know. That's a lot to digest.
I didn't mean it as a lecture. I'm sorry.
No. It was good. It's because, you know, we sit there and postulate, is that the right word? You know, talk about, discuss it. But you actually experienced this firsthand. This is your gig, what you do for a living. So you're able to recognize, it's like Big John, our producer, when it comes to fantasy sports, we can tell you all the ins and outs when something happens, this injury, that injury, that, because that's our job. So outside of that, we're just pundits. But that said, Craig's been around the block. Craig, your thoughts on what Jamie said in terms of the ballot box stuffing and his others, but also any thoughts, anybody on the absentee ballot manipulation, voter registration fraud, covering up discrepancies. And the only point I want to stress in what Jamie said in terms of what I just said with these is the examples I gave were small examples. But when you get some of these races where it's a tight race, and we've seen, you know, what was it? They say, Jamie or Craig, correct me, but like 12,000 votes nationwide is kind of what it was, or a couple hundred thousand votes nationwide in terms of the separation of the 2020 race.
Hey, I've lost a race by six votes when 60,000 were cast. I mean,
yeah, see, you start so talking this about matters.
Any little thing can change that.
It was a tens of thousands of votes difference in key places with that wound up changing the election. You know, the challenge is, and I think Jamie hit the nail on the head, the problem is once it's been turned into and accepted as a vote, the evidence disappears. And that was one of the biggest reasons why I think there were so many issues with the challenges made during the 2020 election, is because these ballots had been accepted. And once they are accepted, how do you know which ones are false or not? All you can do is take some examples that you specifically have and you can postulate. In a court of law, that's not enough to be quote unquote evidence. And I was, as it was going on, I kept saying, look, if you've got hard evidence, now's the time. You know, stop waiting till you get to court to bring, let the people see that hard evidence right now. And it never really came out. And it's for the very reason that I think Jamie just pointed out. The other thing that happened, I think, in the 2020 election in particular was you had election officials and you had state legislatures, you have people who weren't authorized to change the rules of an election, who changed the rules in the middle of the game. In particular, when it comes to vote by mail, you had states that had never done vote by mail, were now doing vote by mail. You had states who had certain rules in regards to signature verification, who literally threw out all of the rules relating to signature verification. And once again, in the middle of the game, they changed the rules. And now we don't know what impact that had on the election, but I think I would think that it would be impossible, it is statistically impossible to say that it had absolutely no effect on the election. And even the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, look, the rules should have never been changed. There were votes that were counted in 2020 that they weren't going to undo it, but they said they never should have counted.
Right. That, you know, that was my issue. Take it from somebody, again, I'll repeat this as the day I die, somebody who's seen this type of stuff in a corrupt country. You know, as I'm watching this happen, and we're reading these stories by a lot of grassroots journalists because the mainstream media is not covering that. Hey, this is illegal. My question is, where was the GOP with their lawyers trying to stop? Where were the GOP legislatures? This is something you got to scream. This has to become a talking point. And I saw none of that. And as Jamie said, and as we all know, my biggest fear was once the votes are cast, we're screwed. And that's what happened. Well, my take was a little bit different. My take was that the courts are loath to get involved in determining who's going to be the winner of an election. And you can't really sit there and say, hey, you got to do a redo for the presidential election. So to me, that was the biggest reason most of these courts shied away from it, including the Supreme Court. And I could be wrong. That's just my opinion. But you don't want to be the guy. It's kind of like the Pittsburgh Steelers with the Oakland Raiders on the Frank O'Hara's immaculate reception. The ref said we wanted to leave that stadium alive.
It was a catch.
So what I'll tell you is this, is that I did some research with the Heritage Foundation has come up with a list of like 1,561 proven examples of voter fraud where there have been over 1,300 convictions. So we know that it's happening. And the challenge in particular in the Trump case was, and there have been conservative attorneys and election experts who have written books who said, basically, the premise behind many, if not most, of the lawsuits that were filed by Donald Trump's folks, it just wasn't there. And even when they ruled on standing, they still make comments regarding the merits of the case. And oftentimes, it just wasn't the evidence just wasn't there. And I, at the time when I was reading some of these, I was thinking, well, why'd you do that if the evidence wasn't there, if there wasn't any evidence? And I think Jamie made a great point. Over time, you learn to realize, you know, once the crime is done, part of the crime, the evidence disappears. And so it's impossible. So the only thing that you can do is to start to put things in place that allow for the source of accountability beforehand so that those sorts of things cannot happen.
100%.
I agree. So real quick, the history of voter fraud, and I don't want to go into detail, but some of these are infamous. In fact, Big John was one who is always reminding me of the name of what it's called. Is that how you say it? Tammany Hall, New York City, the 19th, early 19th to 20th century. Multiple voting, ballot stuffing, you know, fake names, the intimidation. That was when the intimidation was big, mm-hmm. you know. And then obviously Chicago, you know, right. 20th century. And then Jamie, you alluding to a lot of stuff tonight, aren't you?
Did you ever watch the movie Gangs of New York?
Yes. Right,
if you talk about election intimidation and voter, that was a big part of that movie. That would have never thought of had I not watched that movie.
Right. Oh, yeah. No. See, again, being born and raised in Panama, intimidation is a big part of election fraud there, you know. And it was Tammany Hall in that movie, our producer Big John is saying. And, you know, you had the political machines in Kansas City in the 20s and 30s. In Philadelphia, long history, they had something called the Blocks of Five, which is they paid groups of five voters. That was a whole scheme in place. In Boston, Massachusetts, 19th, early 20th century, ward boss system, you know, so which control politics in specific city districts. The Long Brothers in Louisiana. To the audience, I'm not spouting alleged. These are cases that have gone back in history and have documented. But the cheat happened. The fraud happened. In San Francisco and Pittsburgh, political machines. In the 18, now here's one here. For all these civil rights groups out there, you know, you're on the wrong side of history right now. It's easy to say that. History in the future will determine that. But that's how I see it. But back then, in the 1850s, pro-slavery forces imported voters into Missouri to cast votes illegally. Because they were trying to keep the black vote down. That was what? Republican at the time. It was the Jim Crow laws, the Jim Crow South, widespread voter fraud. In 1890, this is the one that I had learned in history and completely forgot about. In Mississippi in 1890, the state imposed a $2 poll tax, literacy tests, and disenfranchisement black voter registration went from about 67% to 5.7%. And I remember studying that. And what hit me was a lot of it had to do with the literacy really whacked a lot of blacks from being able to vote. You know, so all of this was calculated. And as our producers brought up, Louisiana in 1900, suppression tactics, 1800s. Now, this goes back to the 1700s, where in colonial America, informal voting practices often led to manipulation in terms of individuals voting multiple times, which, as Jamie went back with ballot stuffing, that seems to be the age-old, tried-and-true way to steal elections. So I wanted to bring that up.
I read in your notes, you know, you did such a great job on this. I mean, I'm going to file this because there's so much good information here. But the one that I don't think I heard you say, I was looking for it here, so sorry I had my head down, but where people would vote multiple times by shaving. you
no,
know.
No, no.
And so I was like, and I never even thought of it. I never even thought of it. I was like,
it's this guy. It's, hey, didn't you just vote? Who did I look like? The guy with the beard. I'm clean shaven, bro. What are you talking about? You know. But so this has gone down since the dawn of civilization, to be quite honest. But in America, I wanted to focus on that all the way back to the founding of this country. And in recent times, which you guys chime in here with the recent times, Philadelphia. See, I always look at the urban areas. It's the easiest to cheat in because it's density. There's so many precincts. It's easy for that vote to get lost in the shuffle.
The other thing is people don't personally know each and every voter. You know, where I grew up, there were probably 800 people in my precinct. And you either went to the Baptist church, the Methodist church, or the Presbyterian church, and everybody knew it. Everybody knew everybody. And so there wasn't, you know, there's not as much opportunity when, you know, you have, and in my precinct, it was the ladies from all three churches who would get together and run the precinct. And so, and there's not as many voters, you know, when you have a precinct of 800 people and you have 60% show up, you can do the math and there's just not, it's not worth it, right? Where you go to a precinct that has 4,000 or 5,000 people who vote in it, then that gets to be, a little bit more of a ripe situation. And some of these folks, and, you might have 2,000 or 3,000 people who are in a precinct, but they have, that are in quote, a precinct by in name only, because they all vote at the same library. So the actual workers may be managing 5 or 6 precincts that have 3,000 or 4,000 apiece. So, it might be precinct 12A, 12B, 12C. And just because it's broken up by, you know, either a city commission or, some other local race that gives the precinct a subsection. So, some of these precincts can get quite large.
Right. Yeah. You know, I went and voted at somebody's house in their garage once, but it was in the country. But even then, Jamie, they didn't know me and I didn't know them. You know, so even in the smaller communities, we know there's a time when you could go through a town and the whole town was a couple of hundred yards and everybody did know everybody. Yeah. But even in today's day and age in the rural area, our rural area has grown from a few thousand back in the 70s to we're about 25,000 now. So, I mean, times change. And this, I went right through the history rather quickly, but this is happening in modern times. Again, feel free to chime in, Craig or Annette. I mean, 2016, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, big urban area. Former congressman cheating in Southfield. Another one of just a couple of hundred. And now, I don't care for cheating from whoever. In 2020 in Sioux City, Iowa, Kim Fuang Taylor, the wife of a Republican congressional candidate, illegally filled out voter registrations and absentee ballots. It just, we've got to get rid of this. She was convicted of 52 counts of voter fraud. So I assume there were probably 52 ballots she probably filled out. You know, Project Veritas, which is taking its cue from 60 Minutes back in the 90s, going undercover, exposed the ballot broker. In 2020, in 2022 again, Atlantic City, 2022, Bridgeport. I'm saying these dates because it was post 2020. You know, in 2023, it happened from 2019 to 2023 in Connecticut with absentee ballot misuse. In 2023, Michigan signature verification ruling. I want to touch on that because I want to talk about
it. Go ahead. Real quick, I wanted to hit on, there's another thing with all of those instances that you left out. Yes, they were all urban. Yes, they were all closer together. And yes, they were all predominantly Democrat areas.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's an assumption I'm basing here. considering our audience. That's why
For the audience, I just want them to be understand that, you know, once again, I'm not saying that Republicans are never guilty of attempting voter fraud. I don't know that they are. But I do know this. I do know that when you look at the predominant number of people who wind up getting accused and sentenced, and I'll just say this, Acorn, lay that out there. they tend to be on the left.
But, right, Sue, go ahead, Annette.
No, but my feeling about that would be, you have to if that's happening and people feel that it's happening, then the Republicans start to feel like two can play at that game. I mean, what are they supposed to do? Sit back and take it? You know what I'm saying? It makes it, I'll just say from my own personal experience going through what I'm what's happening in my election right now, it is very hard to have someone strike at you and strike at you, and in this case, have this voter fraud on one side, and not and try to do the right thing, or try to be scrupulous when someone's being unscrupulous. Finally, you're like, screw it, I'm going to cheat too. Then, no,
and that's what Kim Fuang Taylor in Sioux City, Iowa. She was a Republican. Look, you know, people get frustrated. You're right, but I still don't condone it. I condone it in other ways of battle. You know, we have to get down and dirty in the trenches as long as we do what I call the righteous truth. But as far, you're right. That and that's my fear. That's why I'm not a fan of ballot harvesting. Because a Republican wants me to give my open ballot to them. They want to take that ballot and just do a complete down check. What's it saying, Craig and Jamie, when you vote all Republican or all Democrat? It's, you know, they want to take your ballot and do that. And I'm like, no, I don't vote for every Republican because not every Republican's values align with my values. Down ballot voting. Thank you, producer Big John. They want to take my vote and they just want to do a down ballot Republican Party vote. And in 2012, before that, it was Romney was the icing on the cake. But before that was McCain. I completely disagreed with those two. I view them as rhinos. And that made me start thinking, well, how many other rhinos are down ballot? And that's when I started doing my research heavily. That's when I signed up for mail-in ballot. Because I didn't know any better. I still do. And I'd have my ballot next to me, my wife and I. And a couple of days before election day, I'd go online and research every one of them. And I was shocked at how many blanks I left. And the reason we're in this mess with our own party is because who else are you going to vote for? You got to vote for that guy, whether he's a rhino or not. Well, with an 80 to 90% reelection rate, we're stuck with that rhino. You know, and that's why this country's in such a mess. We have people who work for the parties and their donors. And if you have a rhino who doesn't share our conservative values, we're getting doubly screwed. You know, so well, I just got to be real
plain. I'll say we've had, you know, in Florida, we were fortunate that we had a guy named Rick Scott, who's a U.S. Senator running for reelection. And he showed up on the scene in 2010 and with a lot of money, a lot of his personal money, and decided he wanted to be governor and had a vigorous primary with one of my former clients who was the attorney general. And I wasn't working on his gubernatorial race, but, you know, we ended up electing the more conservative guy at the end of the day in Rick Scott. And so, you know, it can happen, but to me, those arguments need to be had in the primary, because in the general, you're voting for more than just the single person. And I know I sound like a party hack when I say this, but, you know, in most cases, even at like the county commission level, school board level, you know, people align themselves with like-minded people. And so if you have, you know, if you're in the minority, you don't get things done. And that's, you know, that's the way our system's created, conduct the will of the majority while protecting the rights of the minority. But we don't have a chance to, if you decide either not to vote. My dad had this dilemma today. He called me. He's like, I just don't know that I can vote for Trump. He goes, I know I can't vote for Harris, but I just don't know if I can vote for him. And I was like, well, why not? He's like, I think he's a jerk. You know, and I don't, you know, I just don't, you know, he's just a jerk. And I was like, well, Dad, he's our jerk, you know, and he's like, okay, you got me. Like, I'll, you know, are you good? Because your vote is too important. You know, my dad's a Vietnam vet. I don't know that he's ever skipped a presidential race or left a presidential ballot blank. And, you know, he's 85 now. And I was just like, well, what, you know, you're going to leave that blank? And I was like, so, you know, maybe Trump wasn't the person you wanted to come out of the primary, but he's the closest person aligned to you. You know, if you're going to vote for Harris, who is going to support open borders, illegals voting in our elections, you know, spending taxpayer dollars for gender care for prisoners, you know, gender surgeries for prisoners. And I was like, I don't see how you, that, and, you know, Dad's a pro-life guy. And I was like, you know, and she's running her entire campaign on pro-choice, and I'm not Donald Trump. And I was like, listen, even if you are pro-choice, to me it seems like you should care about a few other issues as well. And, you know, maybe your children, maybe, you know, somebody else's children, maybe, you know, foreign policy, maybe tax policy, energy policy, environmental policy. Like, there's a lot of things that go into being president that Kamala Harris just has not answered the American people on where she stands and what she'll do.
You know, Jamie, you're right. Go ahead.
I'm going to just give you a quick little, this is just a little bit like anecdotal, but also like related to what you said, Jamie, but slightly off topic. And then I do have a question for you, William, but I have five daughters. Four of them are very Republican, but I have the one Democrat in New York, and she was canvassing for Kamala and in Pennsylvania in a very like important, I guess, district in Pennsylvania. And so they had them go to Democratic houses there, people that had previously voted Democrat, to ask them what their issues were and if they were still going to be voting Democrat. And she said, Mom, you would be really surprised. A lot of them are not anymore. And I said, what was the main issue? And it was hands down, she said, the economy. The people that were voting for Kamala, still, the issue was abortion, pro-choice. The people that had decided, the people who were previously voted Democratic in this district, were who were voting now Republican. It was all, you know, their lives, how their lives were living, the economy, and how it had affected their lives. And I just thought that was very interesting. I know it's just one neighborhood, but I think it was a very important neighborhood. They bust all these kids into this neighborhood in Pennsylvania. Can't remember what the name of the neighborhood was, but I did find her, like, I think she went to maybe 350 houses that day. But they all got on the bus then and talked about, and she said that was really the prevailing conversation for the people. And many of them had switched, she said, which she thought was
really Annette and Craig can chime in on this because it's right down his alley. Yeah. I have learned in America, at least, there are two single issue voters, those who believe abortion is all encompassing and those with gun rights are all encompassing. People forget Bernie Sanders usually voted 99.9% for the gun, for everything pro-gun when he was senator, because he comes from a pro-gun state. But people didn't really know that about it, you know? But I have found abortion rights individuals and gun rights individuals, they are what I call a single issue voter. Craig, can you talk a little bit about that from the gun side?
Yes. And I can speak to both because I've been involved in the pro-life community as well. And what I can tell you is this, the pro-life issue is interesting because it has probably the largest number of single issue voters on both sides of the issue, whether it's pro or whether it's pro-choice or pro-life. In the gun rights community, people who are pro-Second Amendment tend to be more likely to be single issue voters than those who are anti-Second Amendment. You know, I can tell you, and largely what it comes down to in the gun rights community, it's about liberty. It's about recognizing that, you know, the First Amendment is first for a reason, and the second is in case the first doesn't work out. and also an understanding that the first step that totalitarian dictators do take is to disarm the citizenry. Because once the citizenry is disarmed, then the government can do whatever it is that they want to them. And so,
no, you're right.
Yeah. And so, you know, that tends to be, I tend to find that it's more of a liberty issue than it is even a gun thing.
You're right.
Craig, are you at a gun store? Is that guns behind you? Are those guns?
Yes. Those are all rifles behind me.
So Craig's right. It's funny. In Panama, you know, they made sure the citizenry was disarmed until Noriega convinced all the Panamanians, the Yankees are coming, the Yankees are coming, and they distributed guns out to everybody. Mm-hmm. And obviously after the Yankees came and took them out, they lost control, and all the bad guys found out with the guns.
I'll tell you, about a decade ago, there was a young Slavic candidate running for Congress here in the Sacramento area, here in California. And he told a story about his grandparents. He said, you know, when they first came, the party first came, in the motherland where he's from, the Soviet Union, the first they came and they said, you know, we need to register all you guys. We need to know what firearms you have. And they said, it's for the good of the party. Then they came and they confiscated all of the firearms and they said it was for the good of the party. And then they came and they confiscated all of their property and they said that it was for the good of the party. And that's exactly how it works. Once they disarm the citizenry, once they disarm the people, that is, I won't say it's the first step towards totalitarianism, but it's definitely probably the biggest step towards totalitarianism.
I agree. And Jamie, I want to push back a little bit because, you know, that's what that is the party talk, what you said. I'm not saying that as a knock because there's a lot of truth to it. You know, the candidate and the generals who align more with our side. My issue is the dirty politics in the primary that the machine uses against conservative grassroots that I've seen too many times over and over. And I'm like, and then you come back to us, kumbaya, I need your vote in the general. But you do everything unethical, immoral to destroy that grassroots because he's not your chosen candidate. And I saw that firsthand in many cases. So I look at each case individually. And if I see those shenanigans, I'm like, we need to be like an alcoholic. You got to hit rock bottom. Because having a rhino in there, all that does is create a slow cancerous death versus being at the rock bottom as we are right now with Kamala. Maybe the country needed to see Trump lose against Biden to hit rock bottom. Like, I'm not saying I'm right. I just ponder these questions, and I think about it. Go ahead, Greg.
William, I was going to say, you know, one of the things you need to understand is, first of all, William and I are both being from California. We've seen it happen firsthand. I mean, this is the state that convinced people that Arnold Schwarzenegger was actually a Republican. And then everybody wanted to be as liberal as Arnold Schwarzenegger when they got elected. So I would say this. I would say that not every state's apparatus is dealing with that same exact thing, but some of the largest state apparatus, California in particular, which plays, by the way, a big role in the functioning of the RNC, that's the way they function. That's the way they are. And I will say this, the issue is the consultant class. It is the people who run the campaigns, who run the candidates, because they're also the ones who run the political action committees for the corporations and whatnot. And all they care about is being connected so that they can continue to keep their campaign dollars flowing. Winning is secondary to them. Making money, that's their first concern.
That is correct. And somebody said it in a previous podcast many moons ago, and I can't remember who it was. And they said,
I thought it was you, William. I thought you said that.
What I said is when the consulting class was brought up, well, it's a consulting class's fault. And I was like, yeah, but who's hiring the damn consulting class? The lead state leadership and these politicians under them who are told, you got to hire this guy to run your campaign. And a lot of these politicians, they don't know any better, especially if they're rich businessmen first getting in there. They trust the experts in the party. So it's kind of like we're eating our own and still losing. But as long and go ahead, Jamie.
No. My experience here in Florida is because we have some of the most liberal political laws. I mean, and that includes ballot access. That includes ballot access for citizen amendments to our Constitution, the ability to register to vote, the number of languages in which our ballot is printed. You know, in Miami, I think you have ballot access in something like 130 languages. If you have
10, that's a problem.
You know, and if it is or isn't, you know, I don't know that, you know, if you're a citizen, I don't think it's a problem, right? So, you know, if you're a citizen, you're registered to vote, and this is the language you speak at home and you feel most comfortable with it, then that's how you that's the language your ballot should be in. I've said that since the Citizens United U.S. Supreme Court case, which then allowed corporations to act as people, and what that did was it allowed every rich person to become their own political party. And so I think that's then what, if you want to get to the crux of the problem, it's overturning that Citizens United case. And I think one of the ways you do it is just tell a politician, you can take as much money as you want from anyone who will write you a check as long as you report it and you put it in your campaign. Like, you know, the problem we have today is exactly what you explained, William, is that you have a consultant class and you have these political committees, whether you want to call them PACs or political committees or whatever they call them in your state, that are, that the candidate, sometimes in Florida, the candidate can directly coordinate with that political committee. So as a candidate, I can go, oh, I'm only allowed to, William, I'm only allowed to get $1,000 from you into my campaign. Thank you so much for that $1,000. But my political committee would really appreciate a $100,000 donation. And so you end up with these huge political committees. Well, then nobody runs against me. So I have this huge political committee. So I dump it over into the Senate committee and they dump it over here. And so by the time it gets spent over in Orlando or Jacksonville, you know, on the other side of the state, there's no way. I don't want to say there's no way, because you can, if you can go look at the spider web, but it is a spider web of how this money travels around through the system, and it's wrong. And it's, you know, and that's why I'm not a high paid, political consultant. I'm just a good one. And,
you know, and James, so you bring up a good point.
You know, but I like working with candidates, and I've been in campaigns in Florida where even if the candidate, let's say it's a county commission race, they raise $100,000 for a county commission race. I've been involved where political committees have come in for that candidate and against that candidate to the tune of $500,000. And the candidate doesn't even know that it's happening. I don't know that it's happening. It's these third party groups that are run by rich people who want to influence the election. And the candidate's at the whim the candidate goes into the grocery store and is like, I can't believe you said this. Like, I didn't even say it. Like, I didn't even know that it happened. And they don't. I mean, in some cases they do, for sure. But there's some cases where the ball starts rolling down the hill. And in federal campaigns, it happens a lot because candidates cannot coordinate with their federal committee. And so, so that you end up with federal candidates all the time where there's a TV commercial that's just magically on the air and it's talking for me or against me. And I've got no control over it. I think that's wrong to candidates. I think that's wrong to the electorate and citizens. The only people it's not wrong for are the donors, because get to manipulate the system to become their own political party. And I know we all, if I were to poll, hey, should political parties be stronger or weaker? It'd be 90% weaker and 10% stronger, right? And I'm completely against conventional wisdom on that. I mean, Citizens United eroded the infrastructure of our political parties. And that's why we're seeing this toxic, everybody on the extremes just with toxic messaging. Mm-hmm. Because there's political consultants like me who have an email list or a text list, and they're sitting on their computer. And the only way for me to get donations into my political committee that may not be attached to anybody, it's just a political committee that I'm raising money from, and I might go out and do some things with it, but 90% of it is just money for me. And the only way for me to then raise that money, not me, but political consultants, I don't have any political committees, is to write toxic emails so that it gets people upset, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to send you $10. I'm going to send you $10. And they just keep pounding away at these people until they raise enough money, and then they have to take those messages out into the world. And, you know, we need to bring it back. I think that's why my blog and Substack are named Reasonable Arguments. That's why part of my goal is to bring the toxicity level on the extremes down and bring the conversations back towards the middle where I think most of us exist.
No, well, Jay, you're right.
I think you're right. I think it'll start working. And here's the problem is that it works. The toxicity works, and you know, Facebook and the social media, they've studied this stuff, and they know that the more they can get you emotional about something, whether positively or negatively, and negatively is the one that works the best, it's the easiest to do, they know that that will prompt you to action. And campaign consultants know that. And I hate the idea of toxicity. For me, I've always considered the Democrats, they're not the enemy. They are the loyal opposition. Now, I will also say this. There is a difference between liberals and leftists. I heard Ben Shapiro say this, and I agree with him. Leftists are the ones who simply, they hang out with liberals, But their goal is to tear the system down, right? Mm-hmm. Their goal is anarchy. Their goal, they don't want us to be able to have free and fair elections. They don't want elections at all. They want to put their people in charge, and they don't want to shut everybody else up. Liberals may disagree with us, but they still believe in free and fair elections. They still believe in public discourse and debate and putting it to a vote. They still believe in the democratic process. So, you know, that's part of the problem. I have no problem getting toxic when it comes to leftists. When it comes to liberals, I'm a little more forgiving.
I always say I've never run a negative campaign, but I have clarified an opponent.
There you go. I like that.
Go ahead.
That's what I love about Bill Maher. I think
he's a classic liberal.
He's a liberal. He has a good, interesting conversation every single week with different people. People have a lot of times of differences of opinion, but they have a very healthy discourse. They're all very intelligent. I mean, I really enjoy it. That's one of my favorite. I never miss that show on a Friday night.
We don't need to think of it as the far right and the far left.
Yes.
We really need to think of it as a circle. And so when you start thinking of that far right and that far left, and if you think of a circle, when you get down to the circle, the right, the extreme right and extreme left, like you suggested, Craig, are really not for the system at all. Like they want to take it down in different ways and for different reasons, but they're still, you know, most of us, if you think of that circle, are from this half of the circle up. Whether we're conservative and we want to call people who are dead in the middle a rhino, William, or we want to say, okay, you know, but we need to, like, to me, that's a better analogy, is that the extremes of both parties are probably not, they would not be accepted in what I would say would be a strong political party environment. You know, if we had strong political parties, those folks would not exist in the body politic with the loud microphones they have today.
I got to chime in here. So First of all, a rhino is not in the middle. A rhino answers to his donors, and a rhino is a Republican in name only, meaning they don't subscribe to the Republican Party values that Abraham Lincoln created. I have seen this firsthand as a moderate. What y'all are talking about is a blue collar liberal, and then working towards the middle. We're meaning we all have the same goals. We just have different ways of getting to that goal. We'll work together. We'll come out to a compromise that benefits. The problem is, that kept shifting more and more to the left to got us to this toxicity. And the Democrats figured out, in translation to the audience, that toxicity, a better term for that is emotion, which is the most powerful aphrodisiac in the world, especially the emotion of hate. That gets people, you know, I don't like using the term toxicity because it's emotion, because emotion is something everybody has and they cater to the hate. You know, so a John McCain voting against Obama to rid us of Obamacare because he did not like Trump. That's a rhino in my name. John McCain, the military man who was a scumbag who I knew of, research of. To John Kennedy, who was a scumbag because I have friends and family who served in Vietnam who knew him. So, no, I don't use the term rhino lightly. But our party has abandoned its values, and that is never before seen than in California and in other states that are slowly turning blue from red. The conservative value is not about we do this, because I have the same issues with fundamentalists. I'm like, hey, you, 46% of you are pro-life. 48% is pro-choice. We got to figure out a way to come to a happy medium. You know, so I don't look at, when I say the term rhino, I'm not sitting there and misusing the term. I know exactly what I'm referring to. And what Mitt Romney did in 2012 to keep my boy Big John's libertarian opponent, Ron Paul, from speaking at the party convention, as Ron Paul had earned by changing the rules in the middle, shows somebody who's dishonorable and who I want nothing to do with. And what's sad is, those types of people is why politics have a terrible name today. You know, so I'm not picking on you, Jamie, but no, I don't use the term rhino lightly. Go ahead.
And there's a reason why I no longer use the term rhino. I generally refer to them as jackasses in elephant suits.
All right, Jamie, I'm not mad at you. It's just because that's a great point. That's a great discussion point in terms of what you said.
I didn't see it as you were mad at me.
I reserve that for the donkeys on the other party. But yeah, my sadness was when the blue collar Democrats, the last one who betrayed us, Ben, the guy that with the Cornhusker kickback, he was pretty much the last of the blue collar Democrats. They had become extinct like the dodo bird, you know, and conservatives, we fight in California, at least Craig can back me up on this, they fight harder to destroy the conservative grassroots than they do to fight their own Democrat opponents.
I will tell you this, there are blue dog Democrats when you're at the local level. I've seen them on school boards. I've seen them on city councils. I'll tell you right now, our sheriff right now in Sacramento, I am completely and utterly shocked. He's a Democrat who's when I say pro Second Amendment, we used to have a very restrictive concealed carry policy. Scott Jones came in 12 years ago and what made it wide open. We went from 250 concealed carry permits to over 10,000 in Sacramento County. And the first thing that John Cooper did when he came in was he said, I'm not changing the policy. It's staying exactly the same. We're going to make sure that people have the ability to defend themselves. So they exist at the local level. But when you start getting to the state and federal levels, the party apparatus and the unions and that's when they really start to kick in.
Agreed. Now we had a Republican sheriff who was the exact opposite. He didn't want anybody to have guns. In fact, he was a Republican sheriff who was involved in the national incident, Ruby Ridge, or one of those who supposedly gave the word to go in. But that said, Craig is right, Jamie, and I don't know if you guys see it, but this is why I know conservative values are deep down the best form of living your life. Why? Because every freaking progressive becomes very conservative when those progressive values come into their community. We're seeing it firsthand with the lithium battery storage, all the green people. I spoke to somebody just the other day who's fighting the battle in a different town. And I'm like, why is this guy coming up on my contact list? Then I had to, oh my God, he's a Democrat operative I had to work with years ago. So I called him, when I called him up, you know, the educate us on the battle he had been, you know, we were new to the battle. I sat there and said, you know, what's a Democrat who's Mr. Pro-Green all of a sudden fighting the greenies on the lithium battery stores? Because when that shit hits your neighborhood, you don't want it. And Craig, you are right. Once it gets to the lower level, it's about what's best for the community. Right now, in my community, the Democrats and Republicans, all of a sudden the parties decided to get involved in our local planning group. We don't need that because we actually look at the community issue. So, Jamie, what are your thoughts on that in terms of what Craig and I are talking about? The lower you get in terms of the more local it gets, you see the less of the party platforms and more of what's best for the communities.
Yeah, that's true in a lot of places. Here in Sarasota, you know, our school board in Florida, our school boards are elected nonpartisan, but they're completely partisan. And and our school board here in Sarasota County, you know, you all may have heard of Bridget Ziegler, who is the founder of Moms for Liberty, was right here in Sarasota, Florida, and still serves on our school board. And so it became, you know, those meetings became toxic, you know, but it's just like we've gone through two or three superintendents and it's all political and it's a shame because it's not, I don't want to say it became political, not necessarily partisan. It just was like, oh, because there's just so many odd things happening in our school system. You know, Ron DeSantis has basically taken pornography out of our elementary schools, which seems like it would be a no-brainer since you have to be 18 to purchase pornography. But, you know, some liberals are hell-bent on having pornography in, and I say these aren't public libraries. These are elementary school libraries. These aren't high school libraries. These are elementary school K-3, K-5 schools where, you know, these materials exist. And, And Rhonda seems to like, well, that's not appropriate. If a child can't buy it over the counter, we shouldn't have it in our school system.
Right.
And that makes perfect sense. And sometimes that common sense just makes liberals' hair go on fire, which is what happened here in Sarasota. They just lost their minds. And I don't understand it because I'm just kind of like,
I can tell you why.
You shouldn't be able to rent it from your own school.
I can tell you why it has. As a school board member here in California, we're dealing with this and fighting this battle on the regular. And it's literally, this is an example. There's two different stories, two different things that we could be talking about that are occurring that we could do whole shows on. One is on the actual issue of quote unquote book bans. In that the message is they're saying, well, they're going after books that promote disparate, you know, people who are underrepresented people, the LGBTQ community, the Black community, yada yada yada. And so all you hear in mainstream media or in liberal media is that they're trying to ban these books that promote things that are that promote these things that promote other cultures and other perspectives. What they don't tell you is that if you go to the American Library Association's website, every single one of the top 10 most challenged books is done so because it contains sexually explicit material. And some parents, I've literally had to send them images from books like Gender Queer, which is a graphic novel, which means it's a comic book, that has depictions of minors engaged in sexual activity. And I'm like, they're like, this is in public schools. I said, this is what people who are trying to keep these books out of school are trying to fight. But that, right, and that takes me to the other story that needs to be.
If they can't buy it across the counter, they shouldn't be able to check it out in their school library.
I agree, but see, they don't even, cause the idea that something like that is available in their child's library is unfathomable. Right? So there's that issue. And part of that is happening because the media is literally ignoring it. They are telling a completely – this whole narrative, the narrative that I was just telling you, that's all you get in the mainstream media. Right. I spoke to a major news organization. I spoke to their newsroom, and I talked to them about this issue and about this topic. And you literally had people in the newsroom defending it. Well, they can get those images – I mean, they can get those images on their phone. Why? And I'm like, we shouldn't be condoning it. By making it available in the library.
But if they got the images on the phone and they forwarded them to somebody else, they could be arrested in some states as a sexual predator.
Right.
Okay, so we're getting a little bit off topic here. So real quick, on the school board, Craig is right. That's my issue with the Republican Party. That's where one reason we're in this mess is because Democrats have taken over the school systems and the Republican Party refuses to fight. Why? Because they can't match up with the union money. So they give it up and we've lost our kids for a few generations.
I disagree with you on that only because there's been a revolution in places like California and all across the country where parents are running and they're getting elected to these school boards and they're making a difference.
Right. So that has just
parents
started.
Like me.
But my point still. Yeah, exactly. But it still holds true that the Republican Party is not supporting these candidates. Those are because the people have had enough and they know what's happening with the porn. So they're coming out. But prior to that, they weren't. And we got to keep that fight up. So I want you guys to look at the large.
Vote for Annette.
But to segue back, though, because I know you want to get back on topic, and I do too, William, but I would have loved to have say a few moments about all the porn that we got rid of at our school. But I will say, to segue back, earlier, Jamie gave us a really good example of some things that were happening with the ballots. And I thought to your point earlier, William, about education. Now, we're not teaching kids about what's happening with elections. I don't think they even know anything about the Electoral College or about, you know what I mean? Like, Jamie was giving me an education. I was sitting there listening, thinking, wait, these are all things that I don't know anything about. How is that possible? I'm in my 50s. I'm on this show. I probably shouldn't be on for this segment. But William, are we educating our kids about our elections? Are we right? Isn't that to your point?
Right. That is the point, that we're not educating.
You're going to have to remind me where I was smart. I don't know when that happened.
No, but Annette, you are absolutely correct. That's why I'm always harping on just now with the school board, being the Republicans. You want to save this country? Start funding some of these candidates at the school board election and stop becoming the changing of the camera.
Would that be like a civics course? I mean, where do
Yeah, Annette, you had to pass back in the 50s an actual civics test to graduate. We learned about the American system, how we were, our government was run. I never experienced that. I studied and learned that that's, you know, to graduate high school, I forget what the term was. Betty Big John knows here, our producer, but there was you have to know your civics, you know, to graduate. I mean, to become a citizen. Have y'all ever seen the citizen, the actual test that they give? I saw it for my mom, and I was like, oh my God, Mom, you actually know more about the, about American history than I do, that I forgot it. Because we no longer view, in today's world, they view that as, so that's white supremacist way. That's what, now it's about feelings. And Christopher Columbus went from this great discoverer to this guy who killed all indigenous people. I don't look at Christopher Columbus like that. And his family actually directly impacted brutality towards Panamanians before Panama was a country. But back in the day, before they lost all their power and all their sway with the queen, they were pretty much working out of Panama, that little isthmus. So, and you would think that I would hate him the most based on my history, but no, you know, he was a great discoverer. But guys, I want you to look at the large-scale fraud case with the GBI strategies that I put in my notes. My issue with this, it was what you were talking about, Jamie, 8 to 10,000 votes. That's a large-scale voter fraud. You know, so this case was investigated. It was given to the FBI where it went and died. And the reason I say that, because we know Christopher Wray, the current Department of Justice, they are, to put it politely, progressive leaning at worst. But what got me out of this is and Big John, you can probably help us with that comment that Stalin said. It's not who votes, it's he who counts the votes. And in this GBI strategy where they submitted 8 to 10,000 voter registration forms, and what happened was somebody noticed this discrepancy, you know? So an investigation was done. They found pay cards, prepaid style, cell phones, voter registration forms, all kinds of stuff tied into all the illegalities and how they were creating and processing and doing all this. But my issue with all this is, there you go. You know, there's the evidence. But this is what happens in too many cases, you know? The Department, the Michigan Bureau of Elections, oh, there's nothing wrong here. There's absolutely nothing wrong here. So you dig a little deeper. That is a politically appointed position. And it was appointed by the Secretary of State, who was a Democrat. So, of course, the Democrat's not going to investigate and prosecute her own people when they're part of the scam in there. Meaning it's one of those, they look the other way, let it happen, and then it just becomes that much harder to prove. You guys, I sent you all the notes here. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, but Jamie, you're our professor here, with all due respect to all the other three of us here. What are your thoughts in this situation? Am I looking at it completely wrong, or is this all above board?
So this is something that we've changed in Florida as well, where to register people, you have to register with your organization has to register with the state, has to let the state know who is registering, how you're registering, and where you're registering people. So it's gotten and people say, oh, that's horrible, you know, because I can't just go down to the fair or go down to the post office and register people to vote. Well, you know, the government is responsible for ensuring free, fair, and transparent elections, not the League of Women Voters, not the Republican Party, not the Democratic Party. And so, you know, and a citizen has to have some level of responsibility to want to vote. And so, you know, and that's a responsible citizen. And we know that we live among some people who are not responsible citizens. But you know what? That's their right too. They have a right not to vote. They have a right not to be registered to vote. They can choose to not be involved in government or politics or any of those things. You know, in Florida, it used to be, and in many places it used to be, if you were registered to vote, that's how you got a juror summons. So a lot of people didn't register because they didn't want to participate in the jury process. Then they went to like, oh, if you have a driver's license, now you go, you know, you can be a juror, at least in Florida. So, and so there's all those sorts of things that happen that do this. You know, this case reminds me a lot of the case that I was talking about earlier about the Miami apartment complex where, you know, one person goes out, registers people. They know their names, so if they get asked, you know, if it's, you know, William Del Pilar, that they, you know, oh yeah, he lives in 2A and there's a mail-in ballot for 2A and, you know, we're, and it, you know, so it's harder to find, but the apartment owner then ends up getting the ballot, votes the ballot and signs the signature. So, you know, this is not unusual. And the other thing is a lot of these groups, you know, you have a third party group come in, again, not a political party, not somebody who's going to hold people accountable. And they're like, oh, you get $1 or you get $2 for every person you register. So they go, you know, they go to Google and they're walking down the street and they're like, oh, there's three people who live in that house. I'm going to register them, you know?
Yeah.
And so, was it this group or was it an unscrupulous employee or was it, you know, was it truly fraud? Was it a conspiracy? You know, I'm not familiar enough with that specific case to know, but it's not, I don't think it's unusual for this type of thing to happen in states where you allow third party groups to register voters.
And for the audience, let me explain. I get excited and I jump everywhere. So the audience is like, what the hell are you talking about? So GBI Strategies is a voter registration organization that was investigating for submitting thousands. This is large scale voter fraud, thousands of fraudulent voter registration forms in Michigan during the 2020 election. Now, this is a lot of applicants were deemed clearly fraudulent by investigators, but no criminal charges were filed. And that's what I was referring to, that the no criminal charges were filed because FBI has not disclosed what came of the investigation. That's where I think it was sent to die. But more importantly, the Michigan Bureau of Elections said, oh, we saw no fraudulent voter registrations. And that's what I meant is that's appointed by the Secretary of State, the leader of that bureau, and they were Democrats. So my take is, of course, Democrats aren't going to find fraudulent Democrat votes there. And no criminal charges were filed, and the case was referred to the FBI. And again, the FBI has done nothing. So before we close this out, I want to get into three concerns that just came out today. You know, and this goes in accordance with what all of y'all said. You know, you got to catch this before the actual voting happens. So the red flags are there, but what's actually happening? The first one, obviously, we talked about briefly is the Biden, and to answer your question, the Biden-appointed judge blocked Virginia's efforts to remove non-citizens from the voter rolls. Federal judge blocked the vote. Virginia wanted to remove individuals from voter rolls who had not participated in recent elections, particularly focusing on non-citizens. And they pretty much knew who was and who wasn't based off of things. One of the aspects they said was a jury that they brought up, Jamie, was that's one way they cleared out who was non-citizen and who was a citizen was based off the being a juror. The judge stated that purges could disproportionately impact minority groups and individuals from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. To me, that's a hogwash. You know, you either can't vote or can't vote. That's the feelings. That's playing the race card, you know, and however you want to look at it. And that's the fallback excuse, I think, for a lot of activism. The legal basis, it was grounded in legal principles. That's the downside and I looked this up. The Constitution does not explicitly declare a universal right to vote for all citizens. Various amendments collectively establish protections against discrimination and set parameters for voting rights within the framework of citizenship. But the key here is non-citizens cannot vote. And that was the whole basis for purging these rolls. And this judge knew that, you know, and this has been ongoing since 2006 when the law was created, and both Democrat and Republican governors have followed this up to this point in time at every major election, meaning a few weeks out. No issues until we get to the TDS field judge. Jamie, I want to start with you and then Craig and then Annette, your thoughts on this. And then I want to close it out by going to a couple of cases of actual voter ballots being discovered fraudulently.
Yeah, it boggles my mind that people somehow have accepted that there's a political party that wants the infiltration of our country of non-citizens and then giving them the ability to vote. They don't have the right to vote. Nobody should ever say use illegal citizens, illegal immigrants, and right to vote in the same sentence. Democrats want to give them the ability to vote. when they have no reason, there's no reason to allow them any more than a tourist to vote in our elections. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it'd be like saying, hey, listen, I'm going to go to Atlanta this weekend because Florida's taken care of. But since Georgia's a swing state, I'm going to go vote in Atlanta. Like, what?
Yeah, why, exactly.
Why can't I go do that? What, you know, like, if we're going to have this free for all voting, why can't I just pick the state where I want to vote and I go vote there?
No, like, I agree.
So, I mean, it's bizarre to me. So I have trouble making sense of it because it makes no sense.
I agree with Craig. This will probably be dumped in the as it moves up. Craig, your points, and then we'll get to Annette. I'm sorry, Annette, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yes, I quit.
There's a saying in sports: if you're not cheating, you're not trying, and that's pretty much how the Democrats believe when it comes to elections. Their goal is not the protection of the Constitution. It's not it's not protecting the vote. It's not giving people it's all about one thing, and that is about gaining power. And they believe that this is a constituency that if they get them the right to vote, if they get them into the United States, they get them to be here legally, or just get them to stay, and then they get them the right to vote. They believe that this is a constituency that they can dupe to vote for them, because the American people are waking up to the reality of who they are, and they're realizing that they've got to start to replace some of those useful idiots.
Craig, I don't mean to the group. I apologize. I don't mean to digress, but I am a black and white guy. Craig is a black Italian, but he's my go-to to get a conservative point of view of black Americans, or at least black Californians. Craig, I've never seen it before in my lifetime. I've seen more black Americans coming out in support of Trump, talking statistics, and I'm not saying blacks are dumb. Don't get that. I mean, that happens in every, I mean, you go to Latinos, you go to whites, every, but it's like, I've seen this change over the last 6 months to a year. I saw this one guy doing his man on the street, and this one black individual was like, well, man, what's Trump done for, what's he going to do for black Americans? And this other black jumped in and kind of like took over. It just started rattling off. And I mean, I view that as very prideful, because to me, it's like, we're getting educated, even if we're self-educating ourselves on the data. But the reason I'm asking you this is because it has been a stronghold for the Democrat Party, the black vote. What's your take on this when you see this happening? And educate us, because that's what I'm looking for here.
So I'll tell you, my barbershop is in Del Paso Heights here in Sacramento, and it's the hood in Sacramento. And it is a barbershop that is not full of Republicans, let me tell you. But when I go in there, and we've had conversations, and they've literally said, look, to a person, they're either voting for Trump or they're open to voting for Trump, because as one dude said as he was sitting there in the chair, he's like, look, my pockets were fatter under Donald Trump. Reality has set in. Things have gotten so bad for so many. They're realizing and they're recognizing the failures of the Biden administration. And then the worst part about it is that the Biden administration and Kamala Harris are trying to convince us, well, you know, things are fine. Crime's not up. Well, guess what? Crime is up more in the hood than it is anywhere else. They're trying to say, well, prices aren't out of control. Look, inflation has come down. Well, guess what? Prices are up more in the hood than they are anyplace else. They're literally being gaslighted, and they're assuming that voters are stupid. And the people who they're assuming are the most stupid are black voters, because they're like, well, you know, if you don't know whether or not you're going to vote for Donald Trump or me, then you ain't black. That's their attitude. It's like, that's the Democrats' attitude. It's like, if you don't vote for Kamala Harris, then you're not really black. And people, in particular black men, are like, no. Look, I'm not looking for a handout. I'm looking for opportunity. I want you to get out of my way so that I can be the best that I can be. And I just think that you combine the gaslighting of the Democratic Party with how bad things really are, and the reality that they're just not willing to own their stuff, own their mistakes. Folks are like, you know what? I'm done with you. And then once they've been set free, now they're seeing reality. The shade, the covers have been removed from their eyes. The planks have been removed from their eyes, and many of them are able to see it for what it is. Now, it's more than ever, but it's still not the majority. Let me be very clear.
Right. But no, Craig, that's like what I was saying with the school board. it's starting. The parents are waking up and they're starting to make headway. Same thing. And to Jamie, this goes to my point of the slow, long death with the rhino and the cancer dying slowly. And sometimes I believe you have to hit rock bottom. And that's, oh, look at that. And sometimes you have to hit rock bottom and for people to realize, oh, my God, this is crapola. Annette, your take on the large-scale voter fraud that we just talked about.
I agree with the, oh, my gosh, she's so adorable. What's her name?
What's your name?
My name is Jane.
Jane. Say it a little louder.
Jane.
Hi. Jane, you're voting Republican, aren't you?
That's my mother's name is Jane. That's a long time family name in my family.
Okay, guys.
Of course, I agree with the guys. It's nonsensical. But what I wanted to say to what Craig was saying was, I think the Democrats, you know, with them, it's bread and circuses. I think that they think people can be distracted with TV and being checked out and 1,000 channels. And I think I love hearing you say, Craig, that people are waking up and that that's not working, that like sedation and comatose state that some people are in is not going to work for everyone. And there's people who are saying, wait a minute, what does it mean now to live a life? Am I just going to be, you know what I'm saying? Like, how am I going to participate in my own life? I do think there is still a segment of the population, it's fairly big, that is distracted and is sort of like sedated. And that concerns me. And I do think that they're more connected maybe with the Democratic policies of, like I said, the bread and circuses where, you know, just feed me. Just let me sit here. I've got 1,000 channels to watch or whatever. I can look at TikTok. I can look at my phone. Everyone sort of seems like they can be in a comatose state for a period of time and not be that involved. But I get excited by what you just said, that people are waking up, and I do see it with the parents being more active. They're super engaged. With what you just said, there's, right, maybe not the majority, but people are waking up. They're getting involved in their own lives, and that's really exciting to me. I mean, the voter thing, I agree with what both of you said, and you're both more understanding of it and articulate than I am on the subject. The one question I was going to ask you earlier, William, was you gave us a historical explanation of voter fraud that's been happening since, you know, the 1700s, right? Was it? I mean, are you saying, but was your point in giving us that historical context, was your point to say that it's worse now?
Well, my point was that it's been here since the dawn of time, and over the last 4 years, the Democrat Party has convinced half the population that voter fraud does not exist.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, so guys, the Lancaster County, Pennsylvania voter registration fraud scandal, that just came out yesterday or today, that involved 2,500 suspected fraudulent voters. Now, this affects down ballot in close races, but Pennsylvania is one of those closely contested battleground states. So that's significant. And so a significant scandal involving approximately 2,500 suspected fraudulent voter registrations emerged in Lancaster. The investigation was initiated following routine checks that flagged numerous suspicious voter registrations. Again, I want to start with Jamie, the professor here on this. There's a lot of other stuff we can talk about, key details, investigations, legal actions. That's nice and pretty. How do we stop this? Early voting's underway. And this was
Castle. I'm not sure if it was this one, but there was a case in Pennsylvania that Republicans won either yesterday or today. I'm not sure if it was this one or not. But I did see the RNC chairman on one of the news stations, and I don't watch very much news, but I might have it on, you know, just in the background or whatever, but I don't watch that. I'm old school. I consume most of my news by reading. But I did see him saying, you know, this was one that we won. And he said exactly kind of what I've been saying for 20, you know, since the 2000 election, which is you have to stop it before they get inside the polling place. Once they get inside the polling place and vote that ballot, it's a vote. And so any of this that happens, and so, you know, nobody will, after this election, will say, oh, if in fact this is the same case I'm thinking of, these 2,500 votes that never, you know, became illegal ballots, you know, and illegal votes that they were stopped. So it's like, oh, you can't prove that there's voter fraud. Well, yeah, there was. There was an attempt for voter fraud. I mean, in one case I had in the early 2000s, I was working on Jeb Bush's reelection in 2002, and Fort Myers, Lee County is a very, in Southwest Florida, is very Republican county, but there were three or four Democratic districts. And in the 2000 election, I had that identified somewhere. The turnout was just slight, like I said, just slightly higher than the rest of the county. And I was like, okay, so we went, we watched, you know, we put poll watchers in there for the first time ever. For the first time ever, we had poll watchers in this precinct. And people hated it. They're like, well, you think we're cheating? I was like, we're not saying we're cheating. We're just saying that we want a free, fair, and transparent election. And it was funny because I had somebody in there from 8 to 12, somebody from 12 to 4, and somebody from 4 to 7. And the person who was in there from 4 to 7 was a Coast Guard guy. A coastie. And, you know, the person from 12 to 4 couldn't show up. And so I was like, okay, so I went and stood in, I couldn't go in the poll, but there's only one door to get in the poll. So I went in, I sat outside the polling place and I counted people as they went in. And I assumed every single person who went in was a voter. And about every 2 hours, I would go up and say, well, how many people have voted? And I showed like 40 people voting. And the lady came back with like a discrepancy of 400.
Oh,
so you're showing, I was like, we're showing like 240 people have voted here today. And you're saying 640 people have voted here today. She's like, yeah. And she didn't come off that number until the Coast Guard guy showed up in uniform. Cause I like, you got to get here right away. So he was scheduled from 12 to 7, but he was like, I can't get there till 4. So he came in straight from work and started at 2. And as from 2 to 7, those numbers got closer and closer, at, you know, because it was like, oh, this guy's not going to leave, because they were telling us a number. So we would go back and report a number. So that when there was a higher number voted in that precinct, it wouldn't raise any red flags. And so when she's like, oh, this guy's going to stay here till the end of the election. She's, you know, oh, after 6 hours, and he came out one time, it was like 5 o'clock, sent me, I think I had a BlackBerry then, so he sent me an email or whatever you did on BlackBerry, and he's like, yeah, it's kind of funny, because I ask him every hour how many people they have voted, and I'll have 12 people, 15 people, whatever, have come in, and they're taking like 80 people off the report. And he's like, yeah, last hour, they said there were 600 people who had voted, now it's down to 520, because they know I'm not going to leave. And so by the end of the day, we had a 30 vote discrepancy, and you know, and it was like, okay, well, over 30 votes, maybe, you know, somebody miscounted, somebody whatever, but they had planned on voting hundreds of votes, hundreds in this precinct.
And again, it's he who counts, and there's a reason I pointed this out to our producer.
But I can't prove fraud because there were no illegal ballots cast because we stopped them from casting the illegal
ballots.
Right.
And that's my point that I was telling Big John many moons ago, that it's he who counts it. There's a reason these Democrat registrar's office, they were kicking the Republicans out. You know, no. And I remember in Philadelphia, the Republicans and their lawyers called the cops. That's why we can't do anything about it. You know, they're kicking you out. They have the legal right to do that. You know, and the fix is in that sense. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Greg and Annette, your comments on the Lancaster situation. We'll start with Craig.
Well, no, once again, I think Jamie really just kind of made the point.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes we're going to be looking at situations like this, and it's something that's going to be swept under the rug, and they're going, oh, well, that's an isolated incident. Well, there's a list over, like I said, over at the Heritage Foundation of almost 1,600, quote-unquote, isolated incidents. And the problem is that in many, many cases, it's not going to make a huge difference. But as Hugh Hewitt wrote in his book several years back, if it's not close, they can't cheat. If it's close, they can. And yeah, we know the Democrats, I hate to say, sadly to say, but we know the Democrat political machine will cheat if given the opportunity.
Right. Ms. Annette.
I don't know. I would like to know what you guys what you guys think. I mean, is this what you guys are saying? If you think this is actually going to be the game changer, that it actually is significant enough to make a difference?
I'll answer for the group so we can move on. Only it's there's a reason Trump is saying, let's make this election too big to rig, meaning it's just too many votes for him where there aren't enough voter fraud ballots out there. Okay, so guys.
Can I ask them a question, both the guys and you, William?
No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Does that mean that you guys believe that the 2020 election was rigged?
I believe there was voter fraud, but proving it's something else. Mm-hmm. And even Big John stunts me. Where's the evidence? And I can never answer him. And Jamie answered him for tonight by giving the truth. You can't. We're stuck. That's why it's important, as Craig was saying earlier, we got to stop this. And Jamie said it too, before it gets here. Go ahead.
And how do you believe it then?
I think the words we use are important. And, yes. You know, if we say it's rigged, to me, that means that it's unwinnable. Mm-hmm. And there's something that happened either with machines or something that's unwinnable. It's not, you can never get too big to rig, right? And so, so that's why I try to keep my words at free, fair, and transparent elections, because I think that's what we want to strive for, number one, and it's good political dirt to stand on. And because it's not going to shift underneath your feet. It's not going to, Democrats can stand on that dirt with you. And it's just good political dirt is what I would call it. And so now, is there enough fraud that happened in 2020 that would have changed the outcome of the election? Mm-hmm. I still go to Wisconsin, right? And, you know, when you have a state, and there was a state, and Trump needed to run the table on several of these states. And I think the vote count was, the margin of victory was 18 or 20,000 votes. You know, so you have to have a major operation to steal a margin of 18 or 20,000 votes. And I don't know that, and you're probably not voting those ballots down ballot. And so I just haven't seen anything. There's enough computer gurus out there to say, okay, there were 25,000 votes that only voted for president. Nobody's ever come up with that, right? And so I do think that there are things that we can, to me, it's not as important what happened in 2020 as it is that we, when we elect somebody to be the leader of the free world, that we all kind of come together. Remember in 2000, Democrats didn't believe George W., remember, not my president. They said that, yes, they said, yes, about him. And then in 2016, Democrats went so far to harass Trump electors to try to get them to change their vote, right? Hillary Clinton went through, at the time, unprecedented harassment of electors to try to get them, right, to change their vote. And so there's all of these things that can happen. You know, the things I think, you know, William, the things that have happened that are most irking is when the governor of Pennsylvania breaks Pennsylvania law and sends mail-in ballots to everyone, and the court backs him up. And yep, that, exactly, is frustrating, because it's like, you should be in jail for election fraud. Like, the governor committed fraud.
And that's when I get mad at Republicans. You got to fight tooth and nail, and they chose not to. But it goes to so Craig, your point here, and I want to hit on the technology. Then I want to get the ranking of where the U.S. falls.
Well, I'm going to make 2 points, and then one is, if you think it doesn't matter, it does. Even if we're not just talking about presidential election, I want to remind you about a certain senatorial election between Al Franken and Norm Coleman, where we now,
that's right,
it has been documented that there was voter fraud. And that voter fraud resulted in the election of Al Franken, which actually turned into, if it weren't for Al Franken, there would be no Obamacare. So just to give you an example of the difference that this sort of stuff makes, mm-hmm, I don't believe that it has as much of an impact on the presidential election as it does on more local elections. But I'm not saying that it didn't have a difference in 2020. I just haven't seen the evidence. And I think Jamie has kind of made the case, because it's really hard to come up with the evidence. For me, it's not just about those things. It's not just about the election fraud at the ballot, but it also comes back to stealing elections with a media that is in bed with the left, with government agencies that are siding with the left, with the alphabet agencies and the technology companies that are literally putting their thumbs on the scale for the Democratic Party or for the Democratic candidates. It's amazing that Republicans can win anything when you consider the odds that they have to go up against just to get the word out and just to be able to get their message out and reach out to voters.
Right. And to allude to, and to in regard to the Al Franken, that was the race where they kept going court shopping and there were all these ballots that were always mysteriously found in somebody's car lot. And it was always mysteriously 98% Democrat, 2% Republican votes. And to Jamie and to the audience here, before we move on here, do y'all really think we can stand hand in hand with somebody like that? I'll be serious, because that's what we're facing right now. You know, is that type of Democrat? It's kind of hard to find somebody on the other side to stand hand in hand. And that's my issue. We Republicans and conservatives will stand alongside Democrats. As Craig alluded to, Jamie alluded to, it was Hillary going after electors. It was Democrats saying Bush isn't my president. You know, and as Annette said, we learned from that. There was a good chunk of people, not many actually, who said Biden's not my president. But all the hate that represented that image that we have to deal with the other side. And that's what's created the tribalism. And that's what's pushing our own side to become more like Democrats. It's easier to take up the other side's tactics when yours fail to work. And ours fails to work for two reasons. I believe in too many states, the Republican Party has become spineless. And as Craig said, we're also fighting the media. And Big John, our producer, said the same thing to me off screen there. So I'm not pushing back in the sense, Jamie, that you're wrong. I'm just saying that's a difficult battle to try to win over Democrats to go, hey, we got to stand together for the betterment of this country, when the rhetoric has created so much hate towards our side. They just, you know, Craig would be caught every connotation that negative black stereotype words they use, even, you know, where I have been called Latino. I have been told to go back to Cuba and learn how to speak English. I'm like, well, first of all, I'm not from Cuba, you know, and I grew up as an American citizen. So we all deal with this hate from the left, and it's starting to happen from the right towards the left. And I'm an emotional guy, so I get caught up in it too. I once told Annette I wanted to have a panel, because I need to stop myself from becoming this person of hate, because I get emotional about it. I wanted her and G, hey, help create some balance there. So real quick, I was in the military. Security with technology, and it still is today, is tantamount. Somebody, a Navy chief, just lost her rank, was demoted because she privately set up a Starlink there for the chiefs to have their fun with, for whatever, nothing nefarious. But the problem is that opened the door towards hacking, towards the enemy seeing this. I take seriously technology. I view technology as a negative. Because the thing about technology, it's going to make our life easier, not more secure, but easier. And when it comes to easier technology, and you have the average newbie as in somebody who's not really familiar, all bad things can happen and will happen. So in Oregon's online voting portal, and you have this in your notes, for overseas and military voters, has been found to have a significant security vulnerability, allowing anyone to access and cast a ballot using a voter's name and date of birth. I won't get into the rest. It's an easy fix. But the problem is, it was there. If somebody hadn't caught it, there's another avenue for voter fraud. So real quick, because I do want to get to where the U.S. ranks other countries, but what's your take with technology and elections? I'm a keep it paper. France does it in one day. Taiwan does it. And Jamie, as you said, full transparency. They count the ballots in public, open. Anybody can show up to see it. You know, and it's done in one day. Because of technology, they're saying in Pennsylvania, Georgia, in all the battleground states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Nevada, all battleground states, that it may take days, if not weeks, to count all the votes. And out of those states I mentioned, five of them, only Georgia is run by Raffensperger, a Republican who is no friend to the conservative movement. So what are your thoughts with technology? Let's start with Craig this time in elections.
Well, now keep in mind that the big issue here isn't just technology, but it's the fact that so many of these states have now are now so significantly have large numbers voting by mail, right? And the problem with that is this: it's not the technology is not the problem; it's the verification. Because if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you have to the ballot has to come to you in a specific type of envelope. There has to be certain information on the outside of the envelope. The envelope has to be sealed. You've got to open it up. You've got to match the signatures. All of this stuff that takes place takes time, as opposed to if I go to the polls, I should have to show an ID. I show my ID, they hand me a ballot, I vote, I put it in the machine, and now my vote is counted. So the real issue with the time is more relating to the issue of mail-in balloting and voter security, because they could make it faster if you got rid of all the verifications, but it won't make it more secure.
Well, Craig, I'm actually referring to technology and what they're trying to get us to do, the go vote technology. The Democrats' goal is eventually we go to our computers and we vote. That's what the ultimate goal is here, at least in my opinion. This is one way to make it easier for overseas and military voters. When I served, I had to get my ballot. I did not vote in one of the Clinton elections, not because I chose not to vote. It's I got the mail back. You know, I sent it in too late, you know, because even overseas you have a deadline. But I had to follow a certain process. Opening this technology up, and it starts with the overseas. Everything starts with overseas and military voters. That's an excuse they use for mail-in ballots to start it off. We got to make it easier for our men in service. You know, they're in war right now over in the Middle East, you know. So that's what I'm referring to here, because you're right on everything you said. But this is taking it another step into the future, and that's what I'm referring to.
In Florida, we have canvassing boards. And this is, I think, something similar is in most places, but sometimes it's just an elections official. So in Florida, you have a judge, a county commissioner, and your supervisor of elections. And if the supervisor of elections is on the ballot, you get a second county commissioner who's not on the ballot. So none of those three people can be on the ballot. And they meet several times leading up to the election to verify signatures. In Florida, every single mail-in ballot signature is verified by the canvassing board. And that's also the number one way for your ballot to be thrown out. So also in Florida, you can cure your ballot. If you mail in your ballot and they say, oh, your signature doesn't match, you can go to the supervisor of elections office, take your ID, say, I'd like to cast a provisional ballot, or I would like to, you know, get my ballot back and cast in person. And so there's ways for you, if for some reason, we deal with a lot of old people, right? So somebody might have a stroke, somebody may have a medical ailment, and their signature changes. And so their signature doesn't match, and that doesn't mean that it's a fraudulent vote. It just means it has to be verified. And Craig is right. The problem is, some of these states state law does not allow them to even open the ballots until election morning. And so you have you have this huge process of opening and flattening these things so they can go through the machines. And in Florida, what we say is like, okay, for 2 weeks, you know, two or three times, the canvassing board gets together, they verify the ballots. And then they give them to the workers, and then they open them, and then we literally count them. We don't report results. You can't report results until 7 p.m. election night. But those all early votes and mail-in ballots are counted before election day in Florida.
Okay.
So when you see at 7 p.m. Florida coming back with results, that's going to be about 50% of the voters.
Okay, no, I get that, but you guys are missing my point of technology, which is the whole basis of this segment. Because you're both are right, but you guys are talking paper ballots here, and I get it. I'm talking technology specifically here. But that said, Craig has to go. Craig, real quick, give a plug of where people can find you, and then we'll wrap up the conversation. That's fine.
You can find me on you just Google me, Craig DeLuz, CRAIGDELUZ. You can find me on Twitter at Craig DeLuz, or you can follow The Rundown. Just go to therundown.us. That's therundown.us, all one word.
It's so nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you as well. Y'all take care.
Nice to talk to you soon, Craig.
All right.
Okay, so my whole issue with technology does none of what you and Craig said. So I get that. And my issue is, because that's my whole point. So in an indirect way, you kind of answered my question. All that is lost. You add in the hacking potential, you know, yeah. And there, and a Finnish tech showed how he hacked into Dominion. He was a Patrick Bet-David. And on air, this is how you hack in 15 minutes. Boom, boom, boom. So people who say it can't be done, they're lying. But that said, let's get to our final topic here real quick. I went to AI. I asked AI. I said, AI, confirm for me these transparent one-day voting paper ballot countries. And then it hit me. AI, where does the United States rank in integrity of voter? I go, add on other countries that do the efficiency with the voting. And then where does the United States rank? So it gave me in this order, Sweden. Tabulation results are generally available by late evening on election day. Germany, votes are counted immediately after polls close with official reports within hours. France, same day. Taiwan, this is what you were alluding to, completely transparent. They have all the counting done in public and usually the same day as voting. Then now we get to the gray areas. Those four were like tops. Then we get to Canada. Results are available on election night, but some mail-in ballots take longer to count. Again, it's what Craig alluded to. The mail-in ballots start to become an issue, which is unnecessary. It's done under the premise of we got to make life easier for the voter, when in fact it just opens the door to voter fraud. Canada has a strong reputation for integrity, but isolated incidents of fraud. New Zealand, same day, transparent electoral, but a few allegations of voter fraud. Australia, on election night, Norway, results available same day. Norway ranks high in global democracy, transparent. Netherlands, here's where we get to the bad ones. Face challenges related to electronic voting security. Argentina, Javier Milei is trying to get that straightened out, but they have a lot of issues of irregularities is how AI put it. India, they're the largest country. They struggle with voter integrity. At number 12, coming in, these United States of America, the U.S., this is from AI, and I have to finagle AI because AI, every AI platform I've been on gives you a leftist take. I actually talk to AI as if it's a person, and then I always end up saying, we do not have feelings. This cannot make you uncomfortable. Give me the data. You are correct. My apologies. You know, and it gives me the data. So it said, the U.S. faces numerous documented cases of voter fraud and inconsistencies in election management across states, impacting public trust in the electoral process. Tabulation time. Results can vary widely by state. While some states report results on election night, most states do actually in defense of our country. Others may take days or weeks due to mail-in ballots and other factors. I find it ironic that these five battleground states, four of them run by Democrats, are saying we can't get all the counting done in one day. What are your thoughts on the five battleground states in terms of four of them being Democrat, one being what I call Rhino Run, and the United States ranking at number 12? We'll start with Jamie.
It comes back to us as citizens demanding transparency in our elections, and to take 3, 4, 5, 7 days to let people know. I mean, listen, you know, it's kind of, you know, I've heard people argue, you know, measure twice and cut once and make sure it's right. But the truth of the matter is, you know, my experience from the 2000 election is, you know, the longer we were counting, the more votes they were going to find. And that's just the way that was going to work. And so day by day, we were losing votes. And so, you know, our strategy had to become to stop the counting because they were voting with ballots that were not cast, to be honest with you. They were creating votes and creating votes out of skin. Oh, there's this stray mark. Well, let's count it as a vote. Let's put one in for Gore. And, you know, and we had to fight tooth and nail for every single one. And that's what it's, unfortunately, what it's turned into. So, I agree with you that taking, you know, days to say it. Now, I will suggest that, you know, with polling that's coming in and you have exit polling and some of those things, if, you know, should these trends continue that we're seeing for Donald Trump, that and Kamala Harris does not have a defining moment in these final 11 days, I think we probably do know the winner election night, and it will be Donald Trump, because, you know, simply because she has not done it, you know, and we could get into the whole reason why, you know, that she hasn't made the sale. And I think she thought that she was going to get away with campaigning the same way Biden was, which was just like, I'm not Trump, and Trump is a bad guy, and don't vote for him. And it's a different time. They've already had a chance, and they had this huge inflation, the bad economy. If you use the SOM economic method, we entered a recession in July, and people know it. Whether we're in a recession or not, people know their Christmas is not going to be as good as it was under Donald Trump. Their kids are not going to have as many presents under the tree. And that matters to people. Their vacations are not as long. They're not going as far, and they're not able to food costs too much and gas costs too much. And so it's just one of those things where people know something's wrong. They know that Harris was part of what's something wrong, and she hasn't made the sale of what she's going to do different to make it right. You know, she's confused voters in one breath by saying, hey, I'm going to be exactly like Biden. And then in the next breath, she goes, no, I'm going to be different. But she won't explain how she's going to be different.
Right.
So
hold on. She was raised in a middle class family. You know, so come on now. And it's all Trump's fault. So real quick, a couple of points here. I agree with you wholeheartedly. What Craig was saying is that's how Al Franken won. They got one court to go. Okay, you got to count these votes. Then the Democrat Party found another court. We found more votes. Eventually, he won over a 2 to 3 week span because the courts deemed those ballots found in car trunks as admissible to protect the person voting, even though they didn't know who the person was voting. And Jamie, I will never forget this old man. And they showed, you know, that was televised, the 2000 recount there in Florida. And I'll never forget the guy. The person voted for like senator, a couple of down ballot races, but completely left the presidential race blank. So in my take, well, he didn't care for either candidate, you know, but instead that old guy says he voted for these two Democrats here. I can't remember if there was a senator race or whatnot. It was 2000, a while ago, but he goes, well, because he voted for these two Democrats, he meant to vote for Gore, but just forgot to check it off. And I swear to God, excuse my friends. I was like, what the fuck? That's exact. I'll never forget that day. I was like, what? You know, it's like, how do you? Because to me, that's when I got depressed, because all that did was remind me of dictators. All that did was tell me we've become a banana republic by allowing that garbage. That's where, when you talk about Democrats and Republicans should come together in that instance. Because had that been the Republican, I would have been the same thing. What the? No, he voted for, I grudgingly say, he voted for nobody in there. But that really bothered me. Annette, what's your take on the United States, these United States of America, ranking number 12 worldwide, and yet we have the audacity to travel the worldwide to other countries, telling them how to run their elections, and we can't even make it into the top 10.
I have a question though, Jamie. I love having you on because I feel like I learned so much. You know what you were saying earlier about maybe having video, you know, like how we can have more transparency in our elections. Sure. Is that the kind of thing, you guys, I don't know the answer to this, so I guess I still have a lot to learn myself, but why is it state by state? Why wouldn't these laws be for all of the United States? And this is how we, no, I'm asking, is that not a fair question?
I think you can say it's constitutional. You know, it probably, elections are protected by state law under the 10th Amendment. You know,
what's the 10th Amendment?
Well, that's the 10th Amendment is what says something along the lines of, don't ask me at midnight to recite it, but it says something along the lines of any rights not enumerated here. Or in the Ninth Amendment, says any rights not sent here are directed toward citizens. 10th Amendment says the rights that are not listed here go to states. So since the Constitution doesn't discuss elections, that it goes to states. So it's a constitutional question. You know, and I'm for the state by state elections because I think that people misunderstand the importance of our founding fathers of us having a, states rights, that our states have, you know, and we made a mistake about 100 years ago, I think, by going to direct vote of U.S. Senators, because prior to that, the first 100 years of our existence, 120 years of our existence, we elected senators from our state legislatures. And what that, because the U.S. Senate was the body that protected states' rights. And so when we went to direct citizens voting for U.S. senators, we kind of lost, over 100 years, we've kind of lost that history and that reality. And now people say, oh, we want to go to the popular vote to elect a president. And there's not, and so a popular vote would completely diminish all rural states, all rural votes. And, and that's why we have an electoral college, is to ensure that every state has their say in the presidential election. And so, you know, so I would be reticent to go to a national type election law, just because I think it would, the unintended consequence of a national election law would lead us to the further erosion of states' rights.
So Jamie's right. The 10th Amendment reserves. The 10th Amendment reserves the rights of the states and the people, anything that's not in the Constitution. So the federal government can chime in on certain issues because of presidential elections, you know. But Jamie's right. I was in eighth grade in North Carolina in social studies class when I studied the 17th Amendment. And that's what Jamie's referring to. When even as a, my point is, even as a child, I realized when the 17th Amendment was allowed to happen, meaning that the people voted for the senators, they destroyed the basis of what the founding fathers wanted, the separation of powers in terms of the federal government becoming too powerful. But in this case, the parties took all the power. All of a sudden, the states no longer had the right to recall their senator if their senator was not following the state's wants and desires. And once that moment happened, these senators became beholden to their donors and their party. And that's part of the big reason, in my opinion, why we are so corrupt as a nation. Because if that senator was not following what California wanted, if that senator was not following what North Carolina, they would be recalled. It wasn't, and the people were represented by congressmen and women. The state was represented by senators. Now the senators represent their parties and their donors. So they pulled the wool. And I was in eighth grade. How old were we in eighth grade? You know, 14, 15, even I understood the ramifications of that. And I will never shy away from the fact I believe that's what began the destruction of this country and why we are where we're at. Because if the states still had the right to recall their senators, we wouldn't have this whole hosed up Congress where they're too impotent and they've allowed and ceded so much power to the president, because they're too scared to create a fix on immigration because they don't want to get voted out. Well, if they were, the 17th Amendment wasn't there, they would be doing what the states wanted and they wouldn't have to worry about that. You know, and Congress will be more inclined to do what's right for the people, to bring money back to their district. Because remember, Congress, not Congress, but the representatives, they're the ones in power with the purse strings. Now you see the Senate creating the purse strings and sending that to the House. Hey, here's what we're thinking and here's what we're working with. We just convoluted the mess. So that's a very good point, but I view it as even more debilitating in what it's done. But in regards to your question, it's because you don't want the federal government imposing a straight across the wheel. Each state, that's why if you notice in that, I always say these United States of America, because we are not one country. We are what's the word, Jamie? A conglomeration. We're a bunch of states that form a republic, with each state having its own set of laws. You know, that are given to them because it's not in the Constitution. Jamie,
I love it when you're on. I always learn so much. I am literally getting your book tonight. I meant to get it last night. I'm getting it tonight. I want to get that, but well, because I think those speeches will be interesting. And I also think that your Substack would be really interesting. But I feel like for anyone who was listening, William, that was a really good education.
Yes, it was. This was Jamie. She reminds me of that girl who says, "I'll call you." So Jamie, give us your pitch on your book and where to find it, and I'll ask
Mr. I wrote a book, and it's you know, I hope it doesn't disappoint you, that I've compiled 20 speeches that I think are important. You might like the little story behind it. I my wife and I have been married 4 years this December. And when we started dating, she's not political at all. And she's like, why are you, I don't understand why you're political. And so she would get up and drive to work. And so in all my dating acumen, I wrote her a memo about, you know, I think there were 8 or 10 speeches that I liked and that inspired me to be involved in politics. And to her credit, she would put them on YouTube and listen to them on her way to and from work. And then she started a children's book series, Sarasota Summer Adventures, that is about our granddaughters who come and visit us and go on an adventure to a Sarasota landmark. And so, she's 5 books through that 10 book series, and I was always wanted to, you know, like I've started writing a book about the recount. I worked with Catherine Harris, so I wrote that kind of book. I've got a bunch of books, you know, a bunch of words written about that. And I've never just taken it and put it all together. And I thought, you know, here my wife has written 4 books this summer. And I'm like, I'm going to write, I'm going to get my book. And I would like to do more speaking engagements and do speaking engagements. You know, it gives you legitimacy if you have a book. So I was like, oh, I'm going to take, you know, the memo that I wrote her and turn it into a book. And so I added 10 more speeches, or it's a total of 20 speeches. And then I write, to me, it's more about the speeches than what I think of them. So I write a little bit of bio, a paragraph or two of why that person's important or the moment in time is important, and a YouTube link to the speech. And then I try to include something interesting about the speech. You know, Martin Luther King's speech, I Have a Dream. That's the only speech that's not in its entirety because the King family still owns the copyright for it. But an interesting thing about that speech is that I Have a Dream was not part of his written remarks. And it wasn't until he was in the middle of the speech and a gospel singer from the front row, he used the I Have a Dream portion of that speech in a lot of his sermons. And so, and a gospel singer from the front row yells, "Tell him about the dream, Martin. Tell him about the dream." And then he started with this, "I Have a Dream." And, you know, of course, without "I Have a Dream," do we even remember that speech? Mm-hmm. You know, and so it just happened to be somebody who encouraged him to kind of feel the moment and be in that moment and deliver one of the most iconic speeches in American history. So it's called American Speeches That Changed History. And then I write a Substack at Reasonable Arguments. You can find me on all my socials, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, at Rep Jam, YouTube, at Rep Jam. I think that's it. I don't know.
I love when you're on the show, Jamie. I was so excited when I saw you tonight. Wait, do you have a Reagan speech in there? I have to know. Is that one of the 20 speeches?
Yeah, there's a couple of Reagan speeches in. Actually, the person that has the most speeches is JFK, probably because he was part of kind of the first president in the media time, and he had this tumultuous time in our history of both foreign and civil domestic unrest. And so JFK was dealing with a lot, and so I think he has the most. But an interesting thing about I saw the Challenger explode, from our school, you could see the Challenger go up. And I was in my math class, and my teacher, you know, all the rest of the school goes out, and my math teacher was one of these hard-nosed, you know, old-school teachers. And she's like, no, you're not going to go watch the thing go up. And my science teacher came in, the shuttle go up, and my science teacher came in crying. She goes, the space shuttle just exploded. So we all run outside, and, Peggy Noonan, who was Reagan's speechwriter, talks about, and I'm probably telling you all the good stories, but she talks about in there how she had to write a speech that would touch, you know, older Americans and 8-year-old children who may be their first time watching news. And so she tried to write a speech for Reagan that would encapsulate that feeling. And I think if you read the speech that she did exactly that. And so
it's a beautiful writer.
Well,
she's very good. So
you got to add my monologue from today in there, and I think it'll be a kick-ass book. and with that, to the audience out there, thank you for listening. Make sure you like and share this podcast, and more importantly, you subscribe to this podcast. And we have a whole range of other ones, sports, libertarian, pop culture. You can find these podcasts at grumbiesmedia.com, as well as our social media outlets, YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora. So I am William Del Pilar for Annette and Mr. Jamie Miller. Until next time, this has been Fired Up, and I bid you adieu.